This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hoppadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
A lot of people firing off on the text page today. There's people, they are not happy with the Houston Texans, and rightfully so, as we head into the 9 o'clock hour on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hoppadillo IPA. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you. Texans lose last night 34-20 to the Chiefs.
That hoppadillo will get you, Sean.
It sounds so good right now. I'm not going to lie. Yeah. I've claimed all week long by 10 o'clock we're done. This is the last of 33 consecutive days that I've been on the radio.
Oh, yeah. Sick of your own voice.
Doing a show. Well, that happened a long time ago. But I vowed that I'll go to a men's tea clinic after the show. I'll get in my four-mile walk after the show. And I vowed that by 12:30, I will be getting drunk by the pool, getting ready to listen to the station the rest of the day to hear the reaction. I enjoy hearing the reaction of our peers here at Sports Radio 610. So
I don't like it because then I'll hear Clint make a point that I wish I had made, and then I'm miserable all weekend
long.
Fine,
then you just steal it and use it on Monday. That's fine.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah. All right, I'll start doing that. I'll carry my notepad around.
That's right. Justin Reed was one of the players who met with the media following the game last night. I think he made a cardinal sin when it comes to talking about the mistakes that were made in the game by the Texans last night. Here's Justin Reed on defending the run.
You know, every team in the league hasn't had the opportunity to have those pregame seasons. Hasn't had the opportunity to go live. The most important thing is the health of the team. So we're just trying to keep guys healthy. And I'm sure as the season goes on, we have more opportunities at live play, then the tackling will get better. We just didn't have the opportunity for those preseason games to iron out some of those. And you've seen it show up today. And like I said, just plainly and simply, we got to be better in the run game. We got to be more physical. We got to stop the run.
Yeah, see, Justin Reed's a smart guy, so he was smart enough to acknowledge that they and the other 31 teams didn't really have a real preseason. When you hear players blaming what happened on the field on the lack of a real preseason, is that a cardinal sin, or is it just the truth?
I don't know whether it's a cardinal sin. What I get nervous about is that there's a fundamental gap in understanding what it takes to be a good tackler. I'll tell you a quick story. I was never a good tackler until my fifth season in the NFL because I'd never actually been taught proper tackling form until my fifth season in the NFL. A lot of times coaches think they're teaching proper tackling when really they're just throwing toddlers at each other and telling them to wrap and drive their legs. But the guy, Frank Gantz Sr., was the coach, a special teams coach, who actually spent time with me one offseason, and I worked on my tackling technique. And all of a sudden, I became a really sound tackler. And I did all of that using dummies, non-contact, focusing on things during practice, because Frank Gantz had it broken down to a science, the science of tackling. And we've seen various teams through the years, whether it's the San Francisco 49ers, the Seattle Seahawks, during Legion of Boom, all these different teams, when they adopt strategies and techniques for teaching tackling without doing it live in practice, they become really, really good tacklers. One of the things about the Legion of Doom that was so, or Legion of Boom, excuse me, that was so good was that how much they limited yards after the catch, because right. They were good sound tacklers. They did all of that without being in pads, without tackling live in practice. So yeah, I get really, really concerned when I hear a player say that he needs to learn how to tackle in a game. Like, what the hell are you doing in the 4 weeks leading up to the game? You had 4 weeks to get ready to tackle, and they were not prepared to tackle. So, yeah, that pisses me off. Like, I'm not pissed at Justin Reed individually. I'm pissed that the entire team must seem to think that, oh, the way you get better at tackling is to tackle live in games. That's just that. It doesn't work. The Kansas City Chiefs had the same restrictions. They didn't have any preseason games.
Okay, so
they tackled fine.
I was at virtually every practice, and I can tell you that they did not take anybody to the ground at any of the practices I was at. They had 14 padded practices. I was at 10 of them. And they didn't, even in the scrimmages, didn't take guys to the ground. Now, Lonnie Johnson took Chad Hansen to the ground and then hurt him in the process. That was just one play. But other than that, they did not take guys to the ground. Seth, is that it? There were teams around the league. Pittsburgh was one of them. There were a few others that actually did tackle in practice in training camp because they knew they weren't going to have any joint practices and preseason games in which to do it. Was that a calculated error by Bill O'Brien to not have at least a few practices where they actually tackled each other?
Especially if this is a big reason why they lost a game. I would say that no. I think it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how you can teach tackling. And I'm not saying it's not exclusive to just Bill O'Brien or any of the defensive coaches or anything. Like, I think people that actually teach proper tackling in the NFL, in college football, in high school, it's a minority. And it's been that way for a long time. It's not like a recent development or anything. Very few people actually know how to coach tackling. You don't, like, Ronnie Lott. I actually wrote an article about this like 10 years ago. Like, Ronnie Lott played for the 49ers. Yes, Ronnie Lott was already a good tackler when he got there, but the 49ers had good defenses too. They were never in pads. Like, they flat out knew how to do it. They practiced it. They worked with a heavy bag all the time. It's just never an excuse. You don't get up there and say, well, I didn't get to is an excuse in the first preseason game when you don't tackle well? Kevin Johnson's going on like 8 years of like flinging himself at people and bruising his spleen because he thinks that's the way you're supposed to tackle people. Yeah, so I know the poor kid, poor little bird frame going up there and flailing around.
Now he's got a liver that's been splattered in training camp to go with
trying to be a speed bump for people.
Oh my god!
So likewise. The only excuse I'd give potentially is on the offensive side of the ball, where Deshaun is trying to incorporate a whole bunch of new pieces. They didn't get a whole lot of time during training camp, and definitely none versus live competition. I would make excuses for them if it didn't look exactly like what the Texans' offense looked like the last time we saw them on the field.
Right.
So I don't – like, how am I supposed to say, well, you know, the Texans – don't worry. This is the year the Texans were going to be awesome on offense. It's just that they didn't have a preseason. No excuses.
Yep, doesn't get any easier. Baltimore coming to town a week from Sunday, and, of course, you'll hear that one right here on Sports Radio 610. Payne and Pendergast with you on a – Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Seth, we're getting a lot of texts today about a lot of things, but we multiple texts showing up on the screen right now. Hey, Seth, thoughts on P.J. Hall? Hey, who was number 90? This is another text. Who was number 96? That guy was pretty good. That was P.J. Hall, who really didn't do much during training camp. They picked him up off the waiver wire from the Raiders, who drafted him in the second round in the same draft that Deshaun Watson was drafted by the Texans. So this isn't a guy... This is not a guy who was a second-round pick, you know, back in 2014. This is a guy who fairly recently was a second-round pick, and the Raiders just decided to cut him loose. He was out of Sam Houston State, so he's a local kid. And he is a guy who's got some talent. And Seth, I think he kind of fits the mold of the way that Bill O'Brien is trying to cut some of these corners. If I'm going to overspend here and I'm going to trade draft picks, the way I'm going to make up for this is find some penny stocks that teams have given up on, like Vernon Hargraves and Gary Conley, a few others, that might turn into something in our developmental system, if you will. Now, P.J. Hall, I feel optimistic about because it's Weaver who's putting his hands in the clay here, and Weaver's done a good job of developing defensive linemen. What are your thoughts on what you saw out of P.J. Hall last night?
I was encouraged by that. And one more point about Justin Reed is that, like, I feel like Justin Reed was kind of led into that answer because I can't remember any missed tackles by him last night, and maybe I'm just being stupid and sleep deprived right now.
I seem to remember one, but I'm gonna go back and watch.
Yeah. I didn't look at him as one of the, I think the linebackers were the big issue there. So like I almost felt like he was sticking up for his buddies, but it's just not the mindset that the defense should have right now. As far as P.J. Hall, I was encouraged. Now P.J. Hall, I think he looks a little slimmer than when I watched him play with Oakland last year. And you remember Bill O'Brien said that P.J. Hall had to lose weight. I assume he's lost weight since he's got here. He's a unique body type. He's only about 6 foot tall. He's somewhere between 6 foot and 6 foot one.
He's a fire hydrant.
Which, Right, right. Which doesn't mean you can't be a run stuffer. Jerry Ball was like 6 foot one, yeah. 350 pounds. He was just a monster of a nose tackle. Yeah. You can't. You go ahead and try to move a guy that's 6 foot one, 350. But PJ Hall doesn't have the frame to carry 350 pounds, and he's very, very athletic and explosive. I think there's room for him, and he played a lot of snaps last night. It seemed like he got more snaps as the night went along. So yeah, I was really encouraged by him. I'll give Bill O'Brien full credit if PJ Hall becomes a contributor, but they've got to be more physical up front. That was just, there were times early on when they had linebackers playing down inside and they were getting used up a little bit. You expect that. That's a trade-off you make. When the big guys weren't winning their blocks, they just flat out have to get better.
Yeah. Text message, this goes to the offensive side of the ball, Seth. We should assign Larry Warford at right guard because Fulton needs to go. Here's what I'll say about that. Zach Fulton was not good last night. Zach Fulton is, of the five guys on that offensive line, if you're attacking somewhere as a defensive coordinator, Sharping and Titus Howard are both still young players, but they're more talented than Zach Fulton. Fulton was not good last night. Chris Jones had his way with Zach Fulton. I'll just say this about Larry Warford. One, reportedly Larry Warford, when the Texans would have kicked tires on him, was a gigantic blob of a human being. He was out of shape. He was almost 400 pounds. There was no way that they were getting that. There was no way that Team DTS was going to sign Larry Warford, even with as good of a resume as he had compared to Zach Fulton. The other thing I would tell you is Larry Warford actually opted out of this season without even being on a team. Like, there was a news item. Larry Warford has opted out of the 2020 season. And I'm going, well, that's good, because it appears all 32 teams around the league have opted out on Larry Warford. So it's nice that the feeling is mutual. So even if they had signed Warford, it would appear that he may not have even played this year.
From the sounds of it, from what you just said, he was smack dab in a risk category. You got to worry about that.
Yeah.
He's that heavy.
Big risk for a lot of things, not just the Rona. So yeah, that's the deal on Zach Fulton.
Somebody asked if Lonnie Johnson was in the doghouse. I think Lonnie Johnson was in the rookie house, where he didn't start the game. Vernon Hargraves was starting over there, mostly at left corner, and he ended up playing a lot more in the second half.
Yeah, Seth, this is – okay, Clint was speculating about some pure speculation, but Lonnie Johnson – and I got to see if the tweet is still up. Lonnie Johnson tweeted some bravado before the game about, no more sniping back and forth on the net. We're going to prove ourselves. This is like 5 hours before the game. This was Clint Sterner's theory on it, that maybe somebody saw those tweets that clearly he tweeted. It might have been from the locker room, like as they were getting ready for warm-ups. Yeah. The timing maps out with when they might have been at the stadium at that point. I can tell you this from, again, having been at those practices, Lonnie Johnson was clearly running with the ones the entire time at outside corner. Like, if he lost his job to where he's only in there at scrub time with the backups, then something has happened between the time I was watching practice and the Kansas City game to do that. And I don't know that would necessarily be the case, especially with Gary and Conley on the injured reserve list. I want to go back and watch.
There's a chance he was benched for having a personality.
There's a chance he was benched for something. I want to go back and see how many snaps he played in the first half of the game, because he was invisible in the first half of the game. I don't know that he was even out there.
I just went back through to try to, and I was just checking out outside cornerback, and I saw mostly Roby and Hargraves the entire first half, and then Lonnie Johnson was in there the second half. So that would match up with either A, an adjustment at halftime, or B, that they made him sit for the first half. And text in 713-572-4610. I rewatched the TV copy. I haven't done like a deep dive into this yet. But
that needs to be asked.
Dependable, tough, smart. Remember,
yeah.
Dependable, tough, smart.
That absolutely needs to
be
asked.
Good at football doesn't matter as much as dependable, tough, smart.
All right, Seth, you and I get the rare Sunday to be able to sit down and watch other teams around the league, because the Texans played last night. So a week one trip to NFL Sunday Ticket. Power ranking which former Texans I will be seeking out on Sunday Ticket. Which former Texans am I most intrigued to watch in week one this Sunday? We'll do that next. Lisa Ann joins us, bottom of the hour, for fantasy football advice. The all-important week one fantasy football advice at the bottom of the hour on a Football Friday, presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA on Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
It's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you. Lisa Ann joins us, bottom of the hour, for fantasy football advice. Get you ready for week one. I will say this, fantasy players everybody probably got a little something from the game last night. There was nobody other than Clyde Edwards-Helaire who had a hugely explosive game. Fuller had 100 yards, but he didn't get in the end zone. He had 8 catches. Deshaun got some garbage points. He rushed for a touchdown, threw a touchdown pass. You got I have David Johnson on one of my teams. He had a nice game fantasy-wise, and obviously there were several Chiefs that did some things fantasy-wise last night, getting in the end zone, getting some catches, getting some yards. So I would say that probably not any totally disappointed fantasy owners of players last night as we roll on with Payne and Pendergast here on a Friday. So, Seth, you and I get the rare Sunday this weekend where we don't have to worry about watching anything Texans. We got that out of the way last night. So we get the rare Sunday where we get to sit on our respective couches with a remote in our hand and either watch the Red Zone channel or flip around on Sunday Ticket. Of the former Texans that are out there, and there are a lot of former Texans that are going to be playing in games, obviously, on Sunday this weekend. If we were power ranking the former Texans that you're going to seek out on Sunday Ticket this weekend, where you go, okay, I got to make an appointment to at least be peeking in on this game or put it on one of my picture-in-picture or something. DeAndre Hopkins is the number one runaway winner in that thing, right? Watching
right.
Hopkins go up against the San Francisco 49ers.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's not as much. That means I got to watch. I don't mind watching the 49ers. I'm not sure if I'm going to enjoy watching the Cardinals. But, like, watching specifically for one player, I don't know if I'm into that. Like, I'm going to dial in on DeAndre Hopkins every single down and see how he's doing. I feel like that's more of a box score watching affair.
Okay.
So I might – I think I'm inclined more to watch the Titans versus the Broncos. Now, I don't have to make a choice there because that's Monday night. So part of the – oh, no, that's the doubleheader, isn't it?
Yeah, that's
so
the late
that the late?
Game. Yeah,
that's the late
one. That's the late
I'm not going to stay awake for that. Otherwise, I would be excited about the Titans and Broncos. Plus, every single influential player on the Broncos seems to be going down with – awful injuries.
Yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
Cortland Sutton has some kind of shoulder issue.
Yeah, I guess they got good news on that, unlike Von Miller, who's going to get surgery. Yeah, he left. I know you, Cortland Sutton, you mentioned left practice. Yeah, I guess I'm not asking you to watch every snap these guys take, but of the former Texans, who at least you're intrigued to go look at their box score or whatever this weekend, Hopkins is the clear number one. I think you're saying Titans, obviously, because Clowney is number two on that list. How much do you think we see of Clowney in week one, considering he's just probably just showing up at the building and getting COVID tested over the last couple days?
Well, I think about a lot. Like, there's no onboarding for him. He knows Mike Vrabel's defense.
Yep.
I think the terminology, usually coming in and learning anything, defense is a lot easier than offense, and usually it's just a matter of the terminology. Once you've been in the league long enough, you've seen all the different concepts for the most part. So it's just terminology that's a challenge, and Clowney could probably in a couple of hours with the playbook will be able to, you know, spark his memory on the terminology. So I wonder what kind of shape is Clowney in? He's been working out with Danny Arnold, right?
Yeah.
Right here in town.
Sure has.
So I would imagine that Clowney, regardless of how much he's been working out, Clowney's the kind of guy that can work out 3 times and be in game shape.
Yeah.
It's very annoying. Very annoying, these guys that can just, like, there's a couple guys on every team that are just genetic freaks. They can go out and run half gassers a few times. They're like, all right, I'm ready to go.
Yeah.
So I bet he plays 25 snaps at
okay.
least.
Okay. Well, that's numbers, obviously. If you're paying him $12 million, that number is obviously going to go up once he gets into football shape. So for me, Hopkins, I'm very anxious to see Hopkins in this new offense with a new quarterback, see how much Cliff Kingsbury makes him the focal point of the offense the same way he was here. I'm with you. Clowney's number two. Seth, a sneaky number three on my list of former Texans who I'll be seeking out with the clicker this weekend. Fitzy going into New England with the Dolphins to take on a Patriots team that is a non-break. The last time Fitzy took the Dolphins into New England was actually the last time the Dolphins played a meaningful football game, week 17 of last year, where they knocked the Patriots out of a bye in the first round of the playoffs. And people forget this, somewhat gift-wrapped the Kansas City Chiefs a much easier road to get to that Super Bowl win. If the Dolphins don't beat the Patriots, then the Chiefs would have had to have played a first-round game as a 3 seed as opposed to getting a bye to the 2 seed. That's
yeah.
a big deal. But Fitzy against the Patriots in the first Cam Newton game. I'm excited for Fitzy v. Cam.
What's the line on that?
Patriots 6.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. I'm going to say Fitzpatrick. Who has the better game, Cam Newton or Ryan Fitzpatrick?
I'm going to say Ryan Fitzpatrick. That New England defense is depleted with some of the opt-outs.
Well, the opt-outs
yeah.
and free agency. I mean, they
right.
lost 4 or 5 key defensive players. So it was the best team in the league. It was best defense in the league, or one of the best 3 defenses in the league last year, for the most part. Are they a middle of the road defense this year? You know, New England's, and this is why Belichick is such a good defensive coach for sure. Those defenses a lot of times will start off kind of sketchy, and then over the course of the season, you can watch it on film. Like, you see everybody's technique get better.
Yep.
You see the same players. Hey, he could start off and have a bad defense in the first 2 weeks. Then all of a sudden, by midway through the season, they're one of the better defenses in the league, and it's all through guys just playing with better technique and
right.
better skill. It's the coolest thing in the world to watch if you're a football coach. Just watch the young, unproven defensive players on – the Patriots defense this week, and then just check back in on them 8 weeks later, and you'll be amazed at just how much improvement they are. That's just simple. That's flat out coaching and teaching. But they're not there yet.
No.
So I think Ryan Fitzpatrick has the better game. The only thing I would worry about is that Belichick is going to be a guy that's also going to pick up on Ryan Fitzpatrick's tendencies. You can kind of bait Fitzpatrick into things. Smart defensive backs know. It's one of those deals where they know that he knows that they know that he knows. So, like, Fitzpatrick's thinking, like, well, you're showing me this, and I know that that means that you're going to actually end up in cover two. But what the defense back knows is, like, I know that Fitzpatrick knows that. So I'm going to make him think that I'm going to shift to cover two, and then I'm going to be in somewhere, and then they trap him, and it's an interception.
Yeah, Seth, I know that you're saying that you're not going to take your clicker out and focus in on certain guys as you're watching football this weekend, but I know you're going to be flipping over to that Bengal-Charger game and watching yourself a little DJ Reader. I know you are. As a former defensive lineman, I know you're going to, at least for a few series, go check out and see what DJ Reader is doing for the Bengals.
You know, at the very least, just to watch the Bengals, too, who they've kind of broken type this offseason, right?
Well, they were 2-14. And they're 2-14 last year, and they're spending like they were 12-4. Like,
right.
We just need a few. DJ Reader, to me, was my feeling on DJ Reader and a team spending on him was always going to be that if you spend $12 or $13 million on DJ Reader, you're a really good team that's using him as a luxury. If you're a good team with cap space where he kind of is a luxury piece for you, the Bengals are a team with all kinds of cap space that are clearly paying Reader like he's a foundational player for them going forward.
Well, I think that there's something going on in the NFL now, too, where all these defenses for years now have been focused on stopping the pass and figuring out how to get more speed on the field. Defenses have gotten kind of light in the ass. And I think what people are starting to worry about, and some offensive coaches are starting to see, is, you know what? It's actually kind of easy to run against these defenses. So I think there might be a little bit of a resurgence of the run-stuffing nose tackle who can also push the pocket. Because DJ rushes the passer pretty well for a guy that's mostly there just to push the pocket. But remember the Bengals, Sean. The Bengals forever put out competitive playoff caliber team, not playoff game winning caliber teams, but playoff caliber teams without spending much money at all. And I wonder if it kind of lulled ownership in the Brown family into feeling like, you know what, this is the theory. We can go this way. We don't have to spend that money. And one of these years, it'll fall into place where we just take these cast offs from other teams and make a go of it. So maybe actually going 2-14 and actually having a genuinely awful season and a couple bad seasons in a row made him realize, okay, all right, it's time to spend money. It's time to enact the plan.
Are you excited to see Joe Burrow this weekend?
I am. Unfortunately, I don't think he's – I wouldn't put high expectations on him.
No, I wouldn't either, but I'm intrigued to see because he was not a good college quarterback. And then all of a sudden with Brady there as his – quarterbacks coach at LSU for 1 year, Joe Brady. I think is Brady's first name Joe. I think it's Joe Brady. He's with Carolina now with Matt Rhule. He's the OC in Carolina. That offense went through the roof. Like, Joe Burrow went from a guy who wasn't going to be drafted to the number one overall pick. Normally you'd sit there and go, okay, well, the truth probably lies somewhere in between. Well, they did draft him with the number one overall pick. If the truth lies somewhere in between, then the Bengals failed with that pick. That's why I'm intrigued to see him. You know, it was a 1 year outlier for Burrow. So how much of that is the scheme at LSU and how much of that is truly him being worth the number one overall pick?
Right, but is that – I mean, are you really going to make a decision on that in week one with no preseason?
No, but that's the first – I mean, I can only watch one game, Seth.
He's only
playing week one this weekend.
Right, but I'm saying, like, if you ask me, okay, how do you think Joe Burrow is going to do? I think probably pretty bad. You know, like, Peyton Manning did poorly when he was on a bad team his rookie year, and Peyton Manning had preseason that year. So I think probably pretty bad. That's why I almost don't want to watch it because I like Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see him do well. But I doubt it's going to happen in the first few weeks.
Yeah. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Football Friday presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Lisa Ann is our fantasy football expert. She is going to join us in the next segment. Quick reminder here that this is our last day. This is our last big push to get donations for the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation and the My Home Library program that is getting books into the hands of young folks, kids who live in homes where they literally can't afford books. One book in every 300 low-income families is what the number is right now in Houston, a completely unacceptable number. If you donate $30, that means there's a kid who gets to choose six books of his or her own choosing to read, and getting literacy ingrained in them at a young age is going to be something that's going to have huge ripple effects and benefits for them as they grow into teenagehood and adulthood after that. Like Andrew here, who told me about the six books he picked out.
I chose Zombie Goes to Camp. I got some Lego books, and I also got Tommysaurus Rex.
Tugs at the heartstrings right there, man. HTX Reads. You got to text HTX Reads to 41444. And you don't have to give $30. If you give just a couple of bucks, every little bit helps. But I can tell you, $30 gets a kid like Andrew six books of his or her choosing. So do it today. We got a big push. We're trying to get to $100,000. You guys are piling the money up the last few days. But we need to make this last final push today. And this is a great cause to be a part of. It's the Barbara Bush Houston Literacy Foundation. Again, HTX Reads to 41444. Lisa Ann and some fantasy football advice up next.
From the Twin Peaks Studio, it's a Football Friday on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Carbox Hopadillo IPA. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
And as we will do the entire season in the 935 segment, send you into the weekend with some solid fantasy advice. Of course, the Texans and the Chiefs already in the books, but most leagues, you're still cobbling your lineup together. Although I'd imagine a lot of fantasy players had plenty of players from last night's game in their lineups. But joining us right now is our good friend and fantasy football expert. You can get her on Twitter at TheRealLisaAnn, and she, of course, does all kinds of fantasy advice both on Twitter and on SiriusXM. She's got a great podcast as well. Lisa Ann joining us right now. Lisa, good morning. How are you doing?
Well, waking up after the first NFL game is just like so exciting. I understand that it did not play out the way you would have liked there in Houston for the Texans, but let's just remove ourselves from that for a minute and talk about how exciting it was to really realize that the NFL, other than preseason, started on time.
Yeah, no doubt. We got here. It felt like as big a journey just to get to this season as the season itself is hopefully going to feel going through these 16 weeks. Did anything jump out at you about last night's game fantasy-wise, or was it mostly, did things pretty much go according to plan? Any new sleepers come out of last night's game that teams might be picking up along the way?
You know, I don't think we can consider the Kansas City Chiefs running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire a sleeper at this point, because in the later fantasy football drafts, he was going in the first round. I was very lucky to scoop him up in five or six leagues in the past, 4 days where I was drafting multiple teams at a time. And I really like the way he protects the ball. I think when I look at a rookie, I get very nervous, especially with no rookie minicamp, but you could see the way he protects the ball is going to be his biggest asset. We know he has the legs to push through the line. He has that little dance ability. But then on your side of the ball, I had called David Johnson to get between 7 and 10 targets, carries last night. And my co-host yesterday morning was like, no way, it's not going to happen. I'm like, I think it's going to happen. And Sean, that was a bit of your advice. It was also, reading John McClain's work and following all the news in Houston. David Johnson pulled that little dance step that he does where he gives himself that millisecond to really wait for the hole to open up, and he really can still push off, and he is really still fast. It's great for you, and it's great for Deshaun Watson to have an option there that he can really rely on, and David Johnson came through for you guys last night. I'm sure everybody there is very excited with his touchdown and 77 rushing yards.
Yeah. I don't know if excited is the right word. It almost feels like when somebody gives you a cupcake on the day of a funeral. You're like, okay, well, that's nice. All right, I can do something with this.
That is like the greatest analogy ever, bro. Okay, cupcake at a funeral, not appropriate.
That's what I do. It's pretty much my only skill in life. So, I would say, like, from a fantasy perspective, you got to feel like another cupcake last night would be, okay, Will Fuller got some work done. It didn't feel like it made a difference in the game. But what of the other new additions, whether it's Brandon Cooks or Randall Cobb? I mean, not a whole lot to get excited about with those guys moving forward so far.
Yeah, well, like Brandon Cooks fakes us out all week, you know, a practice, not practicing, injured. Then he goes out there and he like has this fast start. So as a fantasy owner, you're just gut punched, and then you wait another 10 minutes and you're like crickets, nothing from Brandon Cooks. So kind of balances out the thought process. Deshaun Watson looked great. You have to understand that the teams that travel this first two weekends are going to be at a disadvantage. I mean, they haven't left their house. They've been sleeping in their own bed, though they've been working out. They've been staying in their routine, and this is like a kind of shock to the system, like, oh yeah, we're back on the road, I hope I packed socks, right? So there's all these different thoughts that are going through their head, and also they're not really in the rhythm of regular gameplay, and you could see them starting to get tired in the second quarter of the first half. You know, you just saw it. But we are going to see some sloppy play. I was impressed that the score got up this high. I mean, the total points was at 54.5 yesterday. I bet the under. So, of course, you know, the last 2 minutes of the game, I was like sweating my lights out. I'm like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? It's going to go over. I didn't see the score going this high, but it was really about defenses getting gassed in the second half and letting too many scoring opportunities just happen.
You know what? Okay, Lisa, I'm curious about this from a fantasy perspective, because I'll tell you, nobody massages a box score in a loss quite like Bill O'Brien. He'll have you thinking, like, when you look at the box score, you'll think, wow, how the heck did the Chiefs ever pull this off? Deshaun passed for more yards than Deshaun Watson. But from a fantasy perspective, that's real, right? It's just like with the gambling perspective with the over. There's value in having a coach that desperately needs to make the box score look better.
And he's not wrong, but he is wrong in his sense in fantasy, because though Deshaun did have more yards, Patrick Mahomes had more receiving touchdowns. You get points for that in fantasy. So having 3-1 is a painful scenario. But yeah, Bill O'Brien is very good at that. He's the hype man of all hype mans. But you know, it's not an easy way to start the season, but you're facing the Super Bowl champions a week after they got their ring with a team that's fully healthy and hasn't had to adjust but to one new piece, which would be the new running back. You know, you're dealing with Deshaun Watson, who's lost DeAndre Hopkins, not only lost DeAndre Hopkins, but having to add in pieces like Brandon Cooks, Randall Cobb, and David Johnson. That takes more than 4 weeks at camp, but let's not forget the first whole week at camp was nothing but like protocol stuff and COVID testing. So they're just behind a bit on that adjustment. I still think you guys have an awesome season to look forward to.
Lisa Ann joining us for some fantasy football advice. Lisa, I think one of the questions that a lot of fantasy players have with it, not just the offseason where there's been no preseason games, so there's no data to go off of there. There's been no joint practices and reports from practices, by and large, or joint practices and so forth to form opinions. On top of that, we've seen probably more player movement this past offseason of marquee skill position potential fantasy players than any other offseason I can remember, with Brady and Cam and Phillip Rivers changing teams, DeAndre Hopkins changing teams. What's your mindset with these guys going into week one as far as how safe they are as fantasy options, understanding that they're all operating in new ecosystems now?
It is something, it's a great point, Sean. It's something that I really tried to avoid in my drafts as much as possible. I tried to draft, especially early on in draft season, I tried to draft situations that were more in the sense of remaining the same. I mean, even the Dallas Cowboys are dealing with a new coach. Their play caller being the same helps my mindset there. But you have to think about gameplay adjustment. Now, Tom Brady was in Florida immediately. He was already illegally working out with his teammates when the NFL was asking them not to be practicing together. So kind of what I had to do was spend the summer trolling on social media to see who was actually working out with their teammates, as opposed to maybe who was out in LA just training with their trainer, you know, and what player doing. It's definitely a calculated risk, and I think we're not going to see what we want to see from these players who have adjusted until about 3 to 4 weeks in. Tom Brady has a lot of options, but will they be syncing up during game time? As I think everybody's questions. I do think the Bucs are going to be extremely good this season, but I don't think you can rely on Leonard Fournette for the first 2-3 weeks of the season, because he just entered into the fold, definitely did not have enough time to learn the playbook, definitely does not have Tom Brady's trust yet. And I love how, you know, the world goes crazy over like, oh, well, they paid him, or, oh, did you see that social media post of him and Tom Brady? Like, you're falling for advertising people, and they really didn't pay him that much. It's a $3.5 million contract with very little money guaranteed, and most of it is based on incentives. So he might be making $1 million, which after taxes, and his agent is about $400,000, and he's got to work to get those extra incentives. Guess what? If he doesn't play much in the first 2 weeks of the season, he'll never reach those incentives.
Good point.
Lisa, I'm fascinated by your off-season research. Who are the biggest scofflaws? Who said, damn the authorities, I'm going to get this working?
Well, I was impressed with Baker Mayfield, who had Austin Hooper, his new tight end, go out to stay with him in Austin, and all they did was work out together. And I think, you know, him and Odell don't do that. Odell likes to be in L.A. in the summers. He rents a big house in L.A. every summer. He has a trainer. They actually worked out at a high school right next to where I used to live in Studio City. So I'd say, like, him out there, Deshaun would be out there, you know, a ton of players would be out there. But to me, I wanted to see players that were actually working out with their teammates, and I'm impressed that Austin Hooper was able to make that trip out there and really dedicate himself to Baker Mayfield. Hayden Hurst, he drove up from Florida to work out with Matt Ryan and stayed with near Matt Ryan for about 6 weeks. And all he was committed to was, like, pretty much being in a field and playing catch and getting to build chemistry. Chemistry is so important in the moment, right? In the moment of live action football, you cannot be a stranger to your teammates. And if you've taken that time, even the bond that you build from spending time with someone, I'm sure Austin Hooper and Baker Mayfield are going to be a lot closer, right? I did not need to see Lamar Jackson working out with Antonio Brown. That was just like a waste of my time. Like, buddy, work out with your teammates. You know what I mean? AB's got an 8-game suspension, and he'll probably, I got to say though, we're all impressed. AB has kept his mouth shut since the 8-game suspension. I don't know who the keeper is on his phone and his social media, but that person deserves a raise today.
713-572-4610. If you want to text in questions for Lisa, start them or sit them. We always spend about 2 minutes at the end of the segment with Lisa, just rapid firing some of those. So if you got start them or sit them, 713-572-4610. Boy, it's interesting you touching that though, Lisa. I had an auction league this past week, a couple days ago on Tuesday. We did our annual auction in one of my leagues, and there was a guy who stashed Antonio Brown. I would imagine there's a lot of owners out there, a lot of leagues, where Antonio Brown is sitting out there. Did you stash him on any of your teams, knowing that from weeks 9 on, he could be on a roster somewhere? Probably a good roster if it's someone bringing in Antonio Brown.
I did not, because reading further into this story, there is still a looming court case with the woman in Pennsylvania who would need to travel to Florida to go to court with Antonio Brown, and she has not been willing to travel to handle that court case due to COVID. So when you look at the 8-game suspension, that is what's been handed down from the moving incident where there was that altercation where he took the penalty. He still has, I think, 100 or so hours of community service to do, and then he still has this other case. So the 8-game suspension is also looming on what else could come out of this other deal. Every league I was in, he got drafted, and I would just taunt that league mate and say, like, good for me, because you just left me a player who has a job, and you took a player with a question mark during COVID, when we don't know how many players may go on IR. Like, good for you for holding up it's like a bookmarker in a book, right? It's useless. It's just holding the page. He is not going to play until week 9 or week 10. He still has to get through this court case. Things are very slow in Florida right now. I don't think he plays this season.
All right, Lisa Ann joining us, Fantasy Football Advice. All right, Lisa, let's rapid fire a few of these for you. The texts are coming in fast and furious. Before we get to some either ors here, what's the story with Mike Evans in Tampa Bay right now for this week? I know he's been missing practice all week with an injury.
He has, and this is a wait-and-see situation, and we're going to have to wait until Sunday. Maybe Saturday night they'll release the information. I think we're going to look at it like Brandon Cooks. We didn't think he was going to play, but now he is. Even if Mike Evans does play, I wouldn't be comfortable playing him, because I think they will limit his minutes, right? There's no reason to get him out there and potentially have him miss more of the season, and it's not like Tom Brady is missing targets. He still has Chris Godwin. He has his little wide receiver, who I really like as a sleeper, Scotty Miller. He still has three tight ends in Gronk, OJ Howard, and Cameron Brate. So why rush Mike Evans out there? So I'm kind of not going to play him. I don't own him in any leagues this season, but if I did, I wouldn't be playing him.
I'm going to give you one that Seth and I were talking about. Ryan Fitzpatrick and Cam Newton are going against each other this week, and it sounds crazy to say because Cam's a former MVP and he's Cam Newton, but Ryan Fitzpatrick or Cam Newton?
I can't play Cam until I see how he plays, so I would definitely play Fitzpatrick. We already know what he could do with Devontae Parker. He's going to have Preston Williams back in the fold. You got Jordan Howard there. I really need to do the eye test with Cam Newton. I didn't draft him in any of my leagues. I want to see, is he completely mobile? What are we getting from him? Is he just going to be an in-the-pocket quarterback, or is he going to start to use his legs again? I think these are all the question marks we have. And then the next level of that is, who will he make his master target? I did take a couple shares of Julian Edelman to sit on my bench because I figure if Cam Newton can get it done, Julian Edelman will make it happen, right? But I'm staying away. I want to use this Fitz magic until there's no more Fitz magic.
This is a little OG versus a rookie in his first game question. AJ Green or CD Lamb?
I'm very afraid of AJ Green after not playing for 23 games and just having his full practice this Friday. I mean, this Thursday. I mean, that's tricky. I'm going to go CD Lamb there. And the reason is, think about it. We know the coverage that is going to be, why is his name slipping me? He just got huge money in Los Angeles.
Jalen Ramsey.
Jalen Ramsey is going to be all over Amari Cooper. When you look at that, that's going to open up targets for either CeeDee Lamb or Michael Gallup. I do think the Cowboys are going to lose this game. I do think they're going to be playing from behind, so they're going to have to toss the ball. That's going to give some targets to CeeDee Lamb.
Carson Wentz or Kyler Murray?
I love Murray this week, and I'm only worried about the air quality in San Francisco, so I would be watching that first. If it doesn't look good, then you're going to go Wentz. If it looks okay, you're going to go Murray.
Last one, Matt Ryan or Big Ben?
Again, I feel afraid. I want to see how Big Ben slings it. We've seen some wobblers at practice, so I'm going to go Matt Ryan for the consistency with his connection with Calvin Ridley and now his new tight end, Hayden Hurst.
That is Lisa Ann. She is on Twitter at TheRealLisaAnn. Download her podcast. Listen to her on SiriusXM. She does a great job doing all things fantasy. Lisa, we really, really appreciate the time. As always, best of luck this weekend. We'll do it again next Friday.
I can't wait. Have a great weekend and enjoy the games.
There you go. Lisa Ann joining us on the show. Good fantasy advice right there.
You know, Sean, there are two questions that I wanted to ask her, but I didn't. It was stuff that we wanted to get to this week, but we never did, or today. But I didn't want to ask her because it would sound like a question I was only asking her because she was a woman, you know, like, oh I'll ask you this question. So I'll ask you these two questions. One, did we ever get any clarification on that rumor about Odell Beckham Jr.?
No.
The literally filthy rumor about Odell Beckham Jr.
Nope.
So we never got any clarification on that. Yeah, just everybody Google it if you care.
Yeah, of course that's not something that ESPN.com is going to put on their headlines probably.
Yeah. And the other one was like, I was like, if you were to look, I've struggled with this for like 12 hours and I'm trying to figure out like, okay, is this over the line or not? And how do I phrase this? But if you looked at Deshaun Watson and Pat Mahomes' baby pictures, who would you have predicted would be richer at this point in their lives?
Based purely on the possibility for a modeling career, I would have picked Deshaun Watson.
Just that. Yeah, that's all. I'll leave it at that. Yeah. Good for you, Pat Mahomes. Man, he's come a long way.
He sure has.
He's come a long way.
Look who's in studio with us here, the OG
Look
John Lopez. He is back today. And John, just publicly, condolences to you. And
oh, thank you very much. I appreciate
really
that.
Sorry for those, your mom passed.
My mom passed away on Wednesday. Funeral's next weekend, so I decided to come in today. I'm feeling good. We got a lot done yesterday.
Good.
She was amazing. I'm not going to get too much into that, but lots of sacrifices for me even to be sitting here.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. Appreciate that as well, Seth. I will say this about Patrick Mahomes that struck me as soon as I saw that picture, Seth. There were friends of the Mahomes when he was that age that said, he's so cute.
Yes.
Oh, he's so precious. I mean, that's
all you're saying. You're not saying
anything else. And then they got in their car and they went, holy moly. Holy.
That is one ugly
moly.
Yeah, I mean, but there's nothing. That's all you're saying.
I got to tell you, my youngest daughter, I thought she was the most beautiful thing in the world when she was born, but she had thick hair.
Yeah.
And she was born with a full head of hair that was standing straight up. She looked like a troll. I mean, she looked like a troll. And I'm like, I started crying when she was born. I'm like, she's so beautiful. And even my wife looked at me like, really? You think that?
They go through stages, right? They go through stages. See, like sometimes the most beautiful child will have a month where they look like a garden
Mine was
gnome.
When she was born.
It's
Hand
crazy.
To God, her own mother looked at me like, seriously? You think that's cute? That's beautiful?
Hey, John, real quick, because I tried to compose like 8 different texts to you yesterday, and I honestly have a hard time writing to you because you're such a good writer. and it never came out right, but I was tearing up as I was telling my wife some of the things that you've said about your mom, and what an incredible lady she sounded like and how close your relationship has been with her.
Hey, so, and she actually got to say hello to the boys last week, and she got a big kick out of that.
Great.
We had a little Zoom meeting, and I was with her, and she was listening to everybody, asking about what everybody. Who is that that's talking? And who's that that's talking? And she got a big kick out of Clint's voice and B. Scott's voice.
Yeah. Two great pipes.
Yeah,
right there.
Some good pipes there. Yeah. But I appreciate it. Hey, I know we're up against it.
Yeah.
We're going to hit it hard. You know what it is. The happiest man in town right now is James Harden because it's a lot of Texans talk. I'll just put it this way. If it were a movie last night, and maybe this is going to become a thing. If it were a movie last night, it would be Smokey and the Bandit because you got a long way to go and a short time.
That's a good way to put it. We're looking forward to hearing your takes on this game. You and Landry, Figgy Fig, In the Loop. They are up next. Seth, good stuff as always, my friend.
Antibodies, T cells, and not putting your mouth on the water fountain to you.
There you go. That was a strange one.
Hated those kids. Those are weird kids.
Yeah, that is weird.
Hey, kid, if you're listening right now and you put your mouth on the water fountain, you're no better than an infant Pat Mahomes.
Not a thing to do in 2020 for sure in the COVID. Seth, appreciate it. We'll see you at 6 a.m. on Monday. Enjoy football this weekend, my friend.
Hasta la bye-bye.
All right, there it is. That's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. John Boudreau sitting in for Ben Gary. We thank him for producing. In the Loop, up next. Have a great weekend. Stay safe, everybody.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.